You've got 17 seconds to tell us what game we're playing next week, or I'm booting it like below back up.
Welcome to New Game Plus. You're listening to a retro gaming podcast where three guys spend 7 days playing one old game and then we talk about it. My name's Dustin.
My name's Kenny.
I'm Nolan.
And this is episode 182. And today we have a guest joining us on the show that really needs no introduction. So I'd like to introduce him. You might know him as the programmer of one of the greatest games of all time, Gordo 106, The Mutant Lab Monkey, which, of course, was the... Kenny and Nolan, you're like, what?
I caught the first
professional game that David programmed. But you might also know him as the man responsible for the creation of a little-known series called Diablo. I don't know. You?
A few people may have heard of it.
I'm more of a Gordo
guy. If
they've
listened to our podcast, there's a good chance.
You're more of a Gordo guy, for sure. Yeah. He's now founded his own indie studio called Greybeard Games, where he and his team of himself is developing an action role-playing video game that will be the center of our conversation today. The game called It Lurks Below. But before we get to talking about that game, want to first welcome David Brevik to the show.
Hello, welcome.
Thanks for having me, David.
Yeah, we are so glad that you're here. Would you just take a moment, introduce yourself a little bit further to our viewers?
Sure. My name is David Brevik. I've been making video games for a long time. My first was Gordo 106. That was 1992, somewhere right in there. I started working on it in 1991. So I've been making video games professionally for 28 years. And I've been making video games as a hobby since, you know, I was in sixth grade. So long time industry veteran, and was president of Blizzard North, and founded Flagship Studios, made Hellgate London, and was CEO of Gazillion, where we made Marvel Heroes. And now I'm doing my own thing by myself with Greybeard Games, making It Lurks Below.
So just a couple things, not a big deal.
Yeah. We wanted to ask you some questions kind of just up front, and maybe just a few different kind of categories. I guess the first one, just with gaming in general, your program, like how did all of that begin? So let's just start at the beginning. It's the 1970s. How did little Davey Brevik first get into video games?
The very first game I ever played was Pong. I mean, the very first video game machine I ever had owned was a Atari. I think it was Atari made this Pong machine, two paddles. It only played that one game. And I really enjoyed Pong. And then I saw Space Invaders in the arcade, and I fell in love and never really looked
Your
back
mind
after
blown.
That. Yeah. And so then, early in my video gaming career, we got an Atari 2600 for Christmas one year, and you know, I played a lot of that. But I was very interested in making my own things, and I was fortunate enough that my dad was able to get an Apple II Plus for us, and I taught myself how to program on the Apple II Plus, and kind of never looked back.
So you started developing games. How old were you when you started?
I taught myself to program when I was about 11 or so, 12, somewhere right in there.
Wow. Okay. 11, so when did it click for you? Like, you start making games. Was it an early thing, or has it even happened yet? Like, when did you feel like, all right, I understand how games need to be developed, and then now I can just spew it out of my brain into the computer?
No, it was far from that. I mean, yeah. I mean, I knew what I wanted to do. I knew I wanted to make games. I loved playing games, and I wanted to make my own because I couldn't, you know, I was young and didn't have any money. So I thought I could make my own and that would be good enough. And so, you know, learning the program was something that just kind of became a passion. Mainly it came from magazines back then, such as Insider magazine. And that was cider, like C-I, you know, like the drink cider.
Okay.
For Apple. It was and yeah, exactly. Yes. And it would have program listings in there where they would put in a game or something like that. You could copy the code out of the magazine, type it in, and you could get a game. And so I would type in this code, and almost always they were buggy. They had like typos. They had all these kind of things. So in order for me to actually get these games working, I had to debug them for the most part.
Wow.
And not only that, but I would make typos too, you know, just not only would be the typos in the listing, but I would personally make typos. So like getting through the process of making that not only made me extremely good at debugging, but also really taught me to program and how games are made and things like that. And that was really my first involvement. And I would spend hours and hours and hours typing these things in and learning what they were doing so that I could, in theory, make my own.
Can I still subscribe to Insider?
Yeah, I mean, you can still find some of the issues online. They have some backups and things like that. And then it wasn't just Insider. There were a bunch of others that were similar in nature that they did these for Commodore 64 and things like that as well at the time. I think that I didn't really, like, I tried to make my own game and sell it. The very first time I did that was maybe when I was a sophomore in high school. And
really?
Yeah. And I wrote a BMX game on the Apple II. I was big into, I don't know how big I was. I mean, I was super nerdy. So there was like being big into BMX was, there's a scale of nerdiness that was involved in that. And and so I made this BMX game, used the paddles to like bunny hop and stuff. And the track came kind of scrolled on, and you had a character on a bike that would jump over the hills and things like that. It was a little bit like almost like Excitebike. And I made this game, and then I tried to sell it at a local computer shop. And like, I made discs and printed out a little manual and put it in a bag and things like that. They allowed me to put it at the local store, and I didn't sell a single copy. So it was kind of disheartening. I also like had written to magazines to send code listings in, 'cause you could like Insider and stuff would send your listing in, and they would pay you a little bit of money to publish your product or whatever. And I tried a few times to do that and always got rejected, but I never said, I never really stopped having the passion to do that. And,
I'm glad.
And then by the time I was a junior in high school, that's when I first thought about making a role-playing game called Diablo.
Okay. So Greybeard Games technically started when you were a sophomore with a BMX game. Is that kind of what we're saying?
Exactly.
Right? Okay. Yeah. You're independent. First of all, I clean love that. Shade. Secondly, there's no way you still have like the code to that, do you?
No, I don't. I mean, if I could ever find the discs again, I'm sure that they would be there, but I don't know where they are.
Yeah. Oh,
man, that'd be amazing. All right. So you just mentioned Diablo and how that idea kind of came. Were you saying still in high school when you started having the idea of creating a game like this?
Yeah, that's exactly right. When I was a junior, I moved from Georgia to California, and we moved to kind of the San Francisco Bay Area. And we lived in kind of this East Bay community, and we were at the base of Mount Diablo. And so I didn't speak any Spanish when I came to California. And so when I found out what the meaning of the name for the mountain was, I was like, oh, that's really cool. I'd love to use that in a video game someday. That's going to be the title of my RPG. And so like I held on to that for years and years. I mean, I fully intended to, this was going to happen. And my original design for the Diablo game was much more based on kind of a, like Ultima style game, but still RPG, and it evolved and changed over time. But the first ideas of that name and the concept of making an RPG were, you know, the were from high school.
That's so fun to hear the like geographic reference of that title coming from, you know, something that early is super great. It made me smile. So kind of more generally, we talked about your kind of getting to know, you know, like programming in these old video games. I want to turn it on its head a little bit and say we have an audience of people that like playing old video games across the board. I guess games you've made, but games you've played as well. What's your favorite retro video game all time?
Ooh. Wow, that's tough. I don't know if I can just choose one. I mean, I think that Adventure on the 2600 was the first game that I was super passionate about that I loved and I played so many hours of. Then I really liked Wizardry and Ultima. And then I think that by the time I was in college, I think the game that I've played more than any other game, maybe besides EverQuest, is a game called Angband, which was a kind of a, this is back in early college. I was playing, well, roguelike games like Rogue, where the name comes from. And and there are other versions of this kind of game. And there was a kind of a Tolkien themed one where it was called Moria. And the Mines of Moria. Yeah. And then
that's on our list.
Yeah, it's a great game. And they kind of, there was an offshoot of that game called Umoria. And then that got changed again into a game called Angband. So Angband was like the third iteration on that kind of concept. And it was very much, it was very similar in style. It was, you know, you're the at symbol attacking the letter K and things like that. So, and I played an incredible amount of hours of that, thousands of hours of that in college. And that's really the basis for where Diablo, you know, that game is what Diablo is based on, largely based on.
So, okay. When Diablo came out, I guess, or yeah, I guess when it came out, were you shocked at how big it got and how much the game and the series blew up? Or was it like, did y'all feel it coming when you were developing the game?
Yes, I was shocked. I was shocked and I was not shocked. I mean, I was shocked because, I felt like it blew up way bigger than we ever thought. But right, when we were originally pitching the idea, by the way, you can find the original pitch document on my website if you want to go look at it.
I read it. It kind of looks like ancient text. Like it gets kind of dark at some of the images, and I thought it was pretty cool to look at that relic.
And so we had kind of shopped that around. This was, you know, long time ago, before even we would go to Consumer Electronics Show before E3 existed. And we went around and I like for a couple of years, we pitched this game idea to publishers and we got rejected over and over and over again because RPGs were dead at the time. They just were not selling.
Yeah.
Nobody was interested. Nobody was making them anymore. They weren't making any money. And so nobody would even give us the time of day. And eventually we ran into Blizzard, what turned out to be Blizzard. There's kind of a funny story there, but and pitched it to them and they really liked it. So, you know, I think that once we had gotten the deal, it was like, hey, if we could just sell whatever it was, let's say 20,000 copies, man, we are going to be golden. We are going to be like, we could even maybe do a sequel or whatever. So our goal all along was to get to that 20K mark. Like if we could just do that, then, ooh, man, could you imagine even selling 100,000 copies? That would be crazy, but you know, it could be possible. Then as we were developing the game and we changed it from turn-based to real-time, it became real apparent that there was something kind of magical going on. I mean, the moment that I changed the game from turn-based to real-time. Like, it's so crystal clear in my mind exactly what that was like, where I clicked the mouse and walked over and smashed the skeleton apart. Like, it was just like, you know, the heavens parted, the sun shone down into the office, the angels sang, you know, it was like, I mean, it was like a whole kind of like moment. Yeah. And so that really, I knew at that time there was something like remarkable about this. And it what really kind of solidified this for me was that people would work on the game all day and then they would stay after dinner and they would just play.
Just to play the game that they've been working on.
They play the game that they're working on all day. I was like, wow, this may turn out to be all right after all. It's like, and so the enthusiasm for the product was very, very palpable in the office for sure.
Okay, so you did Diablo. You were responsible for Diablo 2 as well.
Yes.
What can you tell us about Starblow?
Starblow was after we did Diablo 2, we wanted to try and create two different projects, up at Blizzard was two separate development companies that got bought and they merged and became Blizzard. And there was Blizzard. We called them Blizzard South. They called themselves Blizzard headquarters, and Blizzard North. And Blizzard North was in Northern California and Blizzard South is down in Irvine. And so up north, we had been working we had done Diablo and Diablo 2, and we wanted to try and take on two projects. So we kind of split the company up a little bit, and one of the products was going to be Diablo 3, and the other product was a variety of things, but it ended up, we kind of rebooted and tried a few different things, but then we kind of solidified, came to agreement on making a game called, we nicknamed Starblow. And it was just like Warcraft became Starcraft. It was Diablo became Starblow. So the it was the, you know, space kind of version of Diablo was the concept. And you kind of had RPGs and you went to, I mean, it was like action RPG, but you went to different planets and things like that. So it was a kind of a action RPG that we were going to make that was set in kind of futuristic space kind of environment.
I'll play it.
Yeah, it was going. It was going to be pretty cool. I was actually pretty excited about it.
All right, two last Diablo questions, and then we've got to ask about about the indie studio Greybeard Games, what you're doing now, those kinds of things.
Sure.
But I'm sure you've gotten this before, but being a little bit more removed from Diablo after the second Diablo, what were your feelings about Diablo 3? And I guess just a follow-up question, what are your thoughts on Diablo Immortal?
Okay. So I think that Diablo 3, I think that they crafted it, like when it first came out, there was quite a bit of controversy about some statements that I made about it. And so I think that, I think that they did a fine job on Diablo 3. It wouldn't have been the same game that I would have made. I had much different plans for it, and we would have gone in a very different direction than they did. So, it was their own kind of creation. And I think that there was not a lot of super positive feedback on it, but they iterated on it and they worked on it. And by the time the expansion came out and subsequent patches and stuff like that, I think that it's turned into a really great Diablo game. And I think that there's lots of people that enjoy the game a lot and play it a lot. And I see many streams and people are quite happy, I think, at this point with Diablo 3. There's definitely an audience out there that is still pretty negative on the product, as well as they don't feel like it's Diablo like that, because it's the atmosphere is different and stuff like that. And that may be true, but it's made by a different group of people, and that can have a big impact on exactly the direction they want to take it. And so sure. I think that in the end, it is a good Diablo game, and the fact that it is sold so well kind of speaks volumes about the franchise, as well as the hard work that the team put in and where they took the game to from where it came from.
Yeah,
and then. Diablo Immortal, I think that Diablo Immortal gets such a negative rap. And I think that Blizzard, did a poor job in announcing the product. I think that they'll agree with that.
What are you talking about?
Yeah, you know, making that the only announcement, we're going to, you know, come to BlizzCon, we're going to have Diablo announcements, et cetera. And everybody comes out and it's a Diablo. You're speaking to a hardcore Diablo PC gaming, you know, people. Right. And then you announce, hey, it's a mobile game. You know, it's like the wrong audience. It was just, I don't think that there's anything wrong with a Diablo on the phone. I think it's a great idea. I think that the way that they handled that and announced it was, you know, it got a lot of negative feedback and probably rightfully so, because they had built it up to be something that it wasn't. That's, you know, people are worried about, is it just going to be a cash grab and all this kind of stuff? And, you know, I'm giving Blizzard the benefit of the doubt here. Blizzard's never really been about the cash grab kind of thing. So I can't really imagine that Diablo on the phone is going to be this big cash grabby kind of game. And so I'm waiting to judge it until it comes out. It may end up being the greatest cell phone game of all time. We just don't know. We don't know. I have much information about it. So I'm just going to be patient and look forward to having to be able to play Diablo, you know, in the restroom for 15 minutes or whatever.
That's actually, just made me actually more excited about the game, thinking about that possibility. So
ever since I played Diablo for the first time, that's what I've wanted to be able to do, play another Diablo while using the restroom.
So. I'm pretty certain I've brought a laptop into a restroom at some point and played Diablo 2 in my life. I'm just saying, maybe TMI. Okay, so that's some really good insight into some, you know, older games in your history. Let's take a turn. Tell us a little bit about your decision as a game developer on deciding to go indie. You've worked for these big successful companies, made some big well-known titles. What made you now at this point say, I want to make a game that's just my very own?
Well, a lot of things, and maybe it was an overreaction. I had just finished being CEO of Gazillion, where I'd been CEO for a few years. And, you know, originally, after Flagship Studios shut down, one of the lessons I learned doing Flagship Studios was that I did five jobs poorly instead of one job well. And you know, I just was wearing too many hats. So after Flagship, I said, I want to just do one job and I want to make games and I want to be a creative director. So I got hired at Gazillion to be the creative director on Marvel Heroes. And I was very excited, but I love Marvel. And so I started working on it. And then I noticed, you know, I brought a bunch of friends over and stuff. And then I noticed that there were some problems in the company and I started talking about them. And then, you know, then they would take my suggestions and then they would, you know, ask me more things. And then pretty soon the board was asking me questions. And then eventually I'm CEO of the company. So and when you're CEO of the company, you aren't working on a game. Like my job all day, every day is talking to investors and dealing with the business decisions and, like, you know, doing finance stuff and, you know, promoting the game and doing all sorts of stuff, but it's not actually creating the game. And there was a bunch of stuff that I really missed. And when I was a kid, I didn't grow up and say, hey, someday I want to be a CEO. Like when I was a kid, grow up and I want to make video games. Heck, and so I'd gotten away for years from just actually being intimately involved in making a game. And so after I left, part of the reason I left is like, okay, I've had enough of this CEO and the politics and all that stuff. That's not what I want out of my life. I want to go back to making video games. And so I left and I said, okay, I'm going to make video games. I'm going to get a small team together and do something so that I can be really involved in the project, kind of like early Blizzard North days. And so I started working on a few ideas and whatnot. And eventually I got into a situation where I started mocking the things up. And I was like, you know, my friend that I made Blizzard North with, Condor, originally Max and Eric Schaefer, they're brothers. They live not far from me. Eric is and Max are still both making games. They don't make games together. They originally made Torchlight together and stuff like that, but they went their separate ways. And Eric is now making these Rebel Galaxy games. And Eric did Rebel Galaxy with just him and another and a programmer named Travis Baldry, who's a superb, an incredible, incredible game developer. Both Eric and Travis are. And they had made that game just the two of them. And I was like, wow, that's really impressive that they did this game, just the two of them. I wonder if I could make a game by myself. And so I started thinking about it, and I was like, okay, I think I can do this. And so I started working on something, and then I realized that was just too big of a game. And I scoped that down, and eventually I said, you know, I really think I can do this myself, and committed to that. So maybe it's an overreaction from being CEO that I've now gone the other way where I'm doing everything myself. And I'm not sure how great of a plan that is, but it is certainly fun. And it is something that I was and still am super excited about doing. I, you know, wake up in the middle of the night excited to work on a product and excited to add things and do the art and make the game come alive. And, you know, that kind of design, programming, art, sound kind of mixture has been just wonderful, and it's just been such a great experience, and I'm super happy doing it.
You love doing that more than getting in a suit and going to try to get more financing from some business person?
Yeah, imagine that. Can you? It's hard to believe. I understand, weird. But yes, absolutely.
Awesome,
love it. We've got some questions that we've gathered from some of our listeners. Could we, if it's okay with you, maybe just do sort of like a little rapid fire where, because we won't go through all of them, but where we could just ask a question and kind of just an abbreviated response, you give an answer to the questions?
Absolutely.
Awesome. All right. So the first one is, what's up with the cows?
I don't know how abbreviated I can make this, but the so originally in Diablo 1 there was rumors. This is kind of like the beginning of the internet, and you know, there weren't really that many sites that kind of specialized in games and things like that, but there were rumors on the internet that there was a secret cow level in Diablo 1, and there were cows kind of on the edge of town. If you clicked on them enough times, that you would get teleported to the cow level, and this kind of rumor grew and stuff, and then people would ask us about the cow level, and we're like, there's no cow level. What are you guys talking about? They're like, I've heard there's a cow level. I clicked on the thing 1,000 times and I can't get it to work. And it's like, so as kind of a joke and a nod to that, in Diablo 2, we're like, we're just going to put a cow level in. and so we said, well, how can we make this the funniest thing that we can think of? And, and so having Wirt, who was a really annoying NPC in Diablo 1, have him slayed when you guys go back to Tristram and like use his peg leg to get to the cow level. We just thought it was hilarious. And so that's really kind of how it came. And then once that was in there, then we put cow levels. I kept putting cow levels in all my games. So that's
cows are your thing now.
Yeah.
Kenny Nolan, you guys found the cow or the not a cow.
It's not a cow. It's a muffaloo. Clearly.
But yes. if you click on it multiple times, please, David, tell me that that's your voices that you recorded.
Absolutely. Mooing. Yeah, it is. Okay. It's myself and my wife.
Yeah.
Wonderful. No, all right. Next question. What is your personal favorite character to play in either Diablo game?
I think that Barbarian's probably number one.
Ooh, me too.
Okay. If you could change something about the Diablo games, not that I would, they wanted to make sure they said, what would it be?
Man, there's so many things. I get asked this all the time. I mean, I think that people don't understand when you're making a game, oftentimes you have to leave things on the cutting room floor, right? You know, they like features have to be taken out and things like that. Oh, we were working on something called BattleNet Town for Diablo 2, where you wouldn't go into a chat room. You went into a little town, and it was kind of instance like a chat room, and you'd walk around and see other people and things like that. And that never saw the light of day. I would have loved to have put that in. But I think that kind of some of the, on the other end, like, I'm not really sure why I have a stamina bar in Diablo 2. I think that like it's just kind of like pain in the butt at the beginning of the game and then totally, you know, irrelevant in the for the rest of the game after about the first five levels. So why are we penalizing the newbies? You know, it's like it's the newbie penalty box or whatever for
the speedrunners.
Yeah, exactly. Like so that you know, I wish that it didn't have stamina bar. I think that that's probably my number one thing I would change.
Cool. Do you still play Dungeons and Dragons? And if so, do you prefer to be a DM or a player?
I do still play Dungeons and Dragons a lot. Nice. In fact, I am running a session right now for Max and Eric, you know, the Condor founders and myself and some other Blizzard North people. And we just played last weekend and it was 2 weekends ago. And yes, I am the DM almost always.
That's amazing. That's are they always in like Diablo like locations?
No, like not at all. No. This has got it's very un-Diablo like for the most part. Gotcha. I mean, it's still there's undead and liches and, you know, people melting and stuff. So it's not a cheery place.
As an inspiration, this is one of the questions. As an inspiration for game developers everywhere, who has been your inspiration when it comes to making games and being a game developer?
Oh, there's been a lot, but I think my very first influence was Richard Garriott. When I was young, I saw an article in, the National Enquirer, and which Richard Garriott had made $100,000 making Ultima. And I was like, oh, my God. You could make video games for a living. Like it never even dawned on me that people make money off of video games or whatever. Like that concept wasn't even in my. And so he was the first person that kind of realized that I could make a career out of this, and it was just an inspiration and motivation for me for years and years.
We'll do one last question here. We've got a lot, but we don't have all the time in the world. All right, so gaming or otherwise, what would you consider to be your crowning achievement in your career? I know that's a big one, right? Like,
I don't know. That's really tough, but I think that probably, you know, Diablo is probably my pride and joy. I had kind of designed and worked on that in my mind for years and years and years and years. It was my passion project. And so, you know, having that come to life, I think was probably, and for it to turn out the way that it did, and that, you know, the moment to change that game to real time and things like that, those, like, there are so many magical moments, and there's so much in Diablo that we take for granted that's in all sorts of games these days, from Diablo 2 and the invention of skills trees to Diablo 1 and the invention of the exclamation point above the head. Like, I mean, there's like so many things that came out of that product, and I'm really proud of what we did there and how we kind of like changed the industry and made a new type of game that people really hadn't played before. And it's just, it's a very special time.
I'm sure that we could sit here and listen to you talk Diablo and gaming and programming for hours and hours, but we brought you on the show to talk about one game in particular. You've been, as we just discussed, the president and the COO and the CEO of some incredibly successful organizations, but now you're a one-man studio, Greybeard Games, and you are working on the game that we're going to be talking about for the rest of this episode, It Lurks Below.
Yes.
Overview.
So It Lurks Below, as we've already mentioned, is groundbreaking for us in that this is the first ever non-retro video game that we've played. You guys can obviously understand why, but not only is it a game being made by David, who we're speaking with today, but it's also a retro style game. So it fits really well with the kinds of things that we see consistently. It's a kind of difficult game to describe because in a lot of ways it's a survival game. Think Terraria or two-dimensional Minecraft. In a lot of ways it's a platforming game. In a lot of ways it's a role-playing game, or an action role-playing game is probably more accurate. And then it's kind of none of those altogether too. And so take all those genres, mix them up in a big soup. And let them come out of a really creative one-man studio, and you end up with It Lurks Below. And the game is exactly what it sounds like. Your character starts on the ground level of this world. It's not an expansive world. In fact, you start going right or left. You quickly learn that the game is one big sort of circle. You loop back around to where you began. And like every good survival game, you've got to live. However, very quickly, you learn that the game lives up to its name, and that the few enemies attacking you on the surface and the little bit of survival you're having to do there is only scratching the surface, because below are hordes and hordes of enemies, bosses, loot to find, armor to gain, things to mine, and levels to be gained. And like every good RPG, you level up, you choose some skills, you choose from a variety of classes, and ultimately your goal is to discover what in fact it is that lurks below.
Exactly.
Have you found out what lurks below yet, Kenny? I know you've been playing it a lot longer.
I don't want to spoil it.
Will you admit what level you are right now?
I know what level he's in.
Hold on. Oh, yeah. Before you say, you only started playing this a couple weeks ago, correct?
Yes. In fairness, we usually talk about an experience we have with the game for a week.
Right.
But even before we realized we were going to have a guest, we had talked about this game and it had kind of interested me. And so I've been playing for a few weeks, not a week. But this game really did it for me. It checked all the right boxes, and I now have the quest coming up to go and kill it, which means you've beat normal level, nightmare level, hell level, inferno level. I really, really wanted to have the game beaten before we played this week, and I tried
the game that
so
many
hard.
Times?
Do what?
You've beaten the game that many times?
No, I mean, you go through the whole series of kind of levels each of those times, just like in Diablo. It's replayable kind of the whole game, but on sort of increasing difficulty with, you know, the resistance fails and all the things that we've come to know from David Brevik games. And it felt really familiar on those fronts. But yeah, so I'm on the fourth iteration and trying to get strong enough to beat the last boss, and I'm not quite there yet.
What level are you?
Oh, I don't know. 91, 92?
And Dustin, you're 7? Is that right?
Yeah, I'm like working on 8 or something okay. like that. Look, there's different modes to play this game. You've got the normal survival mode, but then I think for me, I should have and would, when I go back and play again, I'm clicking casual because I just want to live and thrive and not worry about eating or dying.
You play like Descent style where you do all the levels but not the survival stuff. I could see that being better for you.
It just stresses me out.
David, are you... So, yes, you're playing the game because you're making it and you have to debug and you have to play it. Do you have like a casual playthrough or anyone in your family? Are they like playing the game right now? Just for fun.
Oh, yeah. A bunch of people, not only in my family, but in the community, play a lot and give me tons of feedback. The whole process has been all about getting that kind of feedback. And I'm very involved in the community and our, you know, on our Discord server and things like that, where I'm chatting with people all the time. But my wife plays often on stream. We stream usually about mm-hmm. 5 nights a week. And so she plays often there. I play sometimes. And then my kids also play. My youngest, I have 4 daughters, and 2 of them still live at home. 2 of them don't. They're, you know, older now. And and the youngest, she's 11. She will be... She likes to play kind of the creative mode. In fact, she really likes to come down and bug me downstairs in my office or whatever, so I can turn on God mode for her, so she can just kill everything in one hit or whatever and things like that. So that's about as casual as it gets.
So that's pretty cool that this game, one thing that really stands out to me, and immediately I got this vibe when I played the game, is that there are multiple ways to play. So in Diablo or a game like Diablo, I feel like it's pretty straightforward in what you're needing to do here, but the survival component that you have in this game lets you kind of play casually. Like you don't have to hardcore grind if you don't feel like it. So I think it's really interesting that you have a couple of avenues that you can go with this game. And at first glance, it doesn't seem that way. It seems pretty straightforward. It's about combat. But then when you start getting quests about farming, I mean, I personally was like, hold on now, I like a good farm. And so I got the chicken coops and started building my mega farm.
Yeah, that's there are definitely different camps of people that like that. Like there's a bunch of people that, oh, my God, the farming is so much fun. I love the farming. And and, you know, I love farming, too. That's why it's in the game there. I love Stardew Valley, and I loved almost all these kind of games that have that kind of farming and survival aspect in it. I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed a game called Starbound that had kind of it was a little bit like this in concept, but it was not as deep of an RPG that I was kind of yearning for. And so that's originally kind of where the idea came from. And it had some farming like aspects in it, but you didn't really do much with the farming. But I felt like there could be more there. And there's still even more coming for It Lurks Below for the farming stuff. But if farming can get you, I mean, eventually you can get grow basically the equivalent, I'm calling them crystals, but gems from where you can slot them into your armor and equipment and stuff like that, that you can grow those in the farming. So like if you don't have to hunt for them at all, you can actually just grow things, or you can grow money trees, or you can grow like all sorts of things. So the farming becomes magical in kind of later part of the game.
This is the first time that we have played a game of the week and then had the programmer, developer, creator to come on and talk about it. So it's a complete interesting way that we're going to be working through these different categories or different sections of this episode. One of the things here in the overview section that I'm just super curious about is like, what was there an idea that began this game, or did you kind of sit down and say, all right, One Man Studio now want to create a game, and you just kind of went to a blank canvas and began to do one thing after another? How did this idea, what's the origin story here with It Lurks Below?
So after I left Gazillion, I was focusing on what am I going to make next. And one of the games I had been playing a lot at that time and still play every now and then, but I'd been put in many hours, was Minecraft. But Minecraft, again, was a game where I felt like it just didn't have the kind of RPG depth that I would just love. And one of my great disappointments in my career was I just loved the idea of Hellgate, and I was really sad the way that kind of went away, and the way that ended, and the way that it like launched. And and everybody can blame me directly for that if they want to. I felt like making a Hellgate style, first person-y Minecraft hybrid, I think would be just awesome. And so I started kind of working on that game, and I realized, oh my God, this game is going to take me 5 years to make. I'm supposed to be able to make this in a year or two. Oops. And so after I worked on it for about 4 or 5 months, I realized I've got to simplify this or I'll never be able to do it. And I certainly won't be able to do all the art and things like that. So I said, well, how can I actually make this a reality? How can I make this game, be a one-man studio? And the way that I did that was to kind of simplify the idea. Well, I'll just do the game in a kind of 2D side, from the side kind of perspective, and that will simplify everything. I can do pixel art. It'll simplify the graphics. It'll simplify, all of the collision and all of the computation that 3D stuff needs, and it'll run faster, and I can run it on a lot more machines. And so I think that, that decision to kind of simplify the idea, I like the base idea, but to take that and make it a simpler idea was a big key in me kind of moving forward. And so that originally it was the cross between Minecraft and Hellgate, and then kind of simplified into a 2D side view to awesome. Make it possible for me to actually make it by myself.
I'm a huge Minecraft fan, so it's cool to hear that you were into it too.
Yeah, I love it. I've played ridiculous amounts of it.
Yeah.
Gameplay.
Okay, so when you fire up It Lurks Below, a familiar screen might pop up if you are familiar with some of David's older games. You create a character, and you pick from a list of classes. And
y'all are there eight of them right now?
Yes, there are eight.
Okay. Eight of them. I'm not going to try to name them. I think I could, but I'm just going to say I went with Paladin, and I'm in love, and I want to know when the skill tree is coming, but we'll get to that later.
Kenny, what is your level 1000 character?
Yeah, so I'm playing a wizard.
And then I knew what you two were playing, so I went something different and went rogue.
Which ended up being so cool. I was watching you stream it, and that cue
is
so strong.
What's nice is I can just use an item and then just walk around.
It's
and
perfect
never worry
for you,
Dustin,
because you don't like the confrontation that comes with some
of
these games.
Especially, listen, that's why I said I would like to play casual, because as soon as I went below, I was like, no, I'll just stay up here and I'll just build up here.
But just build my farm.
Yeah, it's scary down there, and if it lurks below, I don't want to go below. So the thing that pressured me below, David, was that the ground around my area kept getting eaten up by this like terrible fleshy eye.
You were so stressed about that.
And so I was like, all right, I've got to go stop this. And so that's when I descended into the depths of hell.
Yeah.
Well, it's wise.
It's a good start.
I love that It Lurks Below is like Diablo, and I'm sure many ways, but in this kind of major way in the setup of the game, and that like how instead of multiple delves into the cathedral's pits, which you do in Diablo, you're doing multiple delves into this massive subterranean world in It Lurks Below.
Yeah. Just the sheer scope of the layers and how big they are and how much there is to explore. I feel like it would be intimidating to some, but for me, like that type of exploration is right up my alley. And so when I first was introduced to the concept and like actually started digging, some of it felt familiar because of Minecraft and because of some of the other things, but like I love caving. And so finding like exploring and then being rewarded for it is such an important, like, I don't know anything about game development, but I do know that I like being rewarded for exploring and for trying things on my own. And so when I see a room full of treasure chests, like, come on, that is so fun.
Yeah, I mean, that is there on purpose. That's exactly what I'm trying to do. You get rewards for going below. And, you know, that is the entire point of the game, to get people down and fighting the monsters and getting better items and, you know, get that kind of addictive loop of finding new items and leveling up and getting better stuff and fighting bosses and that entire kind of RPG base that I've kind of built over years of experience.
Yeah.
I think that's the loop that you have really been able to perfect. I'll admit, both Nolan and Kenny, they have been long-term Diablo fans. I hadn't played it ever. And I had kind of stayed away from it for a while just because the concept that I thought was you just play the same game over and over and over again. And that's not necessarily what's happening in Diablo. And once I played it, we played it on this podcast, both Diablo and Diablo 2 were selected and we played it as a part of the show. And I instantly fell in love. I think these two guys, they would probably, out of the two, they love both, would prefer to, I would probably lean one. It was my first experience with the world. I love storytelling and characters and you get, anyways, I love Diablo, even though I'm sure some of the mechanics were smoothed out in Diablo 2. But all that to say, not just to talk about Diablo, I think that loop is is just something that you've really been able to hone into, David, and then bring here and It Lurks Below, because it's got that same feel of like go down deep, find some success, almost die, go back up to the top, rest, take care of the stuff up top, go back down, go a little bit deeper, discover new things, go back up. And then as Kenny's talking about, it sounds like that you are even going through these various difficulty levels and him at level, I'm just going to keep making it larger and larger, but him at like level 10,000 is still unable to beat the final boss right now. That means that you've even really worked on some quality in-game content that will keep players playing. And I love that. And it's really addictive.
Yeah. I mean, that's the point. The reason to put in the difficulty levels and things like that is to offer new challenges and new ideas. And eventually there's going to be AI changes to the bosses and things like that will make them even harder in the different difficulty modes. And so I think that I love that kind of, I love the randomness of it. Like I love the essence of Diablo is the randomness. And that is the same here with It Lurks Below, where the world is randomly generated and what monsters you're going to face. And there is some structure to the randomness. So you're always going to face this particular boss and then this one and this one and this one kind of thing. But there, you know, where you go and what you're going to face and every kind of like room and how it's laid out and what kind of items you're going to get and things like that. There's no way to predict. And that kind of that keeps it fresh every single time you play. So playing different difficulty modes, it feels like an entire new experience. Plus the AI changes on the monsters. They can do things that they never were able to do before. And like, so there's new challenges and stuff. So all of that kind of like wraps together an experience that can take, you can get tons and tons of hours. There's many people that have been, you know, long time people that have been in the early access. They have 300 plus hours in the game, you know, and it's pretty amazing that there is just that much content there's just that much content for one character, and there's 8 different character classes. And so there's just so much to be able to do and try the games, and each one of the classes plays very differently. And that, that whole feeling, is makes such a great value and such great experience for you to play over and over for a long time.
Yeah, I'm super excited to go back and play a melee character, having done some, you know, being wizard and seeing ranged and watching some of the other guys play and how different the gameplay is. And, you know, I think I'm at over 60 hours of gameplay and don't have it beat yet, and expect to go back and play each of the other classes. And it's definitely that consistent progression combined with random but, you know, quality loot, the loot hunt for that really good item that's just going to fit your build perfectly is so addictive. But it's, I think, and Dustin already said it, but I think the thing that makes this game the most unique to me is how busy you stay. Always, no matter what, I feel like I have something to do. Definitely. And as soon as I finish one thing, I'm either forced to or reminded to or get to do something else. And all of those things feel beneficial. But because there's so many of them getting all mixed around together, none of them end up feeling like a chore. And balancing that, that progression along with keeping interest, and especially when you're going to go back and replay sort of quote unquote the same game, but at different difficulty levels, keeping that interest is really, really hard to do. And I think one of the things that It Lurks Below has done the best out of a number of things that it does quite well.
Thank
and
you.
On that note, David, thank you for the homestone warping back to your base, because you have to go all the time. Like you'll warp down below and then immediately when you show up, it's like new crops ready. And you're like, oh crap, I got to go back.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, Word of Recall was the spell in Angband and Moria where, you know, you would go back to the town and then you read it again and you'd go back to the latest level that you were at. I mean, it would regenerate the level, but you would go to the same kind of depth. And so that was, we used that to make Town Portal and Diablo. And so I can't imagine a game where without that mechanic in it, that's pretty much in every single one of the games I ever make.
Yeah. One of the key things in It Lurks Below is the artifact system. Is that what it's called?
There are a few systems, but that's one of them.
Sure. Sure. That's the items though, right? The like magical power items that you have in the right side of your inventory kind of screen at the bottom.
Right. Those are the ancient items.
Ancient items. I thought that was an intriguing system that I really liked. It's multi-use magic items that can be leveled up themselves based on what class you are. And that was what, Nolan, you had referenced earlier. As a rogue, I don't know if you get or I just got, because I know there's a lot of randomness to the items that you're getting. But I was able to use it to stealthily move around for a while. But you get tons of different artifacts. ancient items that you're able to switch out. And you've got a limited however many you can use. And depending on how low you are, or where you're fighting, or what you need during this time, you end up using those and these scrolls and these different things to where you end up having like a dozen plus buffs at the top of your screen.
Kenny's screen is crazy.
My HP shoots up from like 3,000 to 10,000, and I don't know what it's all even coming from. It's some of those that it's that one that that system is one of the systems that I enjoyed most in this game.
Thanks. That was a long time iterating on that. And I'm also quite pleased with the way that it's turned out. And there will be some more ancient items coming soon that will make those choices even harder. What's your build going to be like? Which ones are you going to? And then I also recently, I think maybe in the last couple months, somewhere between a month and 2 months ago, I changed it so that the ancient items that you find, they stack, so they become more powerful as you get more and more stacks of them. So that also is that hunt for, oh, I just want to make my ancient item a little bit more powerful or whatever. That's a fun hunt to get as well. So I think that with more ancient items, the build choices will become even more difficult / fun.
So in addition to those ancient items, you also have been recently adding skill trees to certain classes.
And yeah, but Nolan, I think you're about to find something out.
What?
Well, I think I just read in the It Lurks Below Discord some patch notes, but I'll let David tell you.
Hang on. Okay, what are you talking about?
Well, I thought that I had heard or read or seen, David, you'll have to confirm or not, that are you taking out skill trees for the time being and then you're putting them in later, or what's the deal there?
Yeah, there is, for a lot of reasons, I'm going to be launching the game very soon. And because of that, I do not have the time to go back and make all the skill trees for every class before it would launch. Gotcha. So the plan right now is to take them out temporarily and then come out with a post-release patch where I put all of them in. This plan seems to change every day. So I'm not, I don't want to commit to anything right now, but sure, that's the plan today, but who knows what the plan tomorrow is. I just love the skill tree so much, and they add so much to the game, mm-hmm. that I really don't want to lose them. So we're trying to figure out a way to make everything happy.
So gotcha. How much money do we need to raise with this podcast episode to get these skill trees?
I don't know. Not much, but yeah.
We're going to do it.
You can
write
a check right away.
So call in.
Yeah. So I bring them up. That's fine. I totally get that and respect that. The cool thing about skill trees just in general, and what's going to be awesome when they're added to the game, to all the classes, is the build variety that you were mentioning. That's one of my favorite things in action RPGs, and just being able to be like, not only, okay, I've played the rogue, now I'm going to play the paladin, I'm going to play the mage. It's like, no, you can play the rogue again, just use a different build. And so, and also the survival tree, also, I guess, maybe you end up maxing that out. Kenny will have to confirm that, but just having options is one of my favorite things. So I'm looking forward to the skill trees. No pressure. The paladin.
No, paladin. I don't feel any pressure. I mean, I feel pressure, but yeah. I understand. Sure. I mean, the reality is that you got to do what you got to do. And it is my desire and commitment to having these things, be part of the game. It's just something that I really enjoy. Originally, they didn't have this. The systems were much simpler. The game was much smaller. The game was much simpler. It didn't even have character classes when I first made it. So the fact is that it's come a long ways, but it's been in early access for over a year. I thought it was only going to be in early access for about 6 months, and we're way over my budget. And I thought there was going to be a business deal that was going to kind of allow me the time to make sure that I could put all the skill trees in. But that fell apart. And so now that we're over budget, I think we need to, get this thing wrapped up and published, and then make patches at a later date.
Cool. Nice. Well, we've had a great time playing it. And we're excited for it to move out of early access and see how it does and then see the continued development. We're getting relatively close to that. Am I correct? The game's going to release. Do you have a date or are we just in the near future?
Well, the date right now tentatively is May 29th, but I don't know if that is going to hold or not. But that's what we're thinking right now.
We got to cut this podcast. You got to go code.
I do.
What are you meaning? He's been coding the whole time he's been talking to us.
He's multitasking right now. He's actually adding stuff.
Aged.
As we kind of talk here in this age section, we usually, as we're dealing with retro video games, talk about how the game has aged and how it's different today, or how it's aged for today, how we can, but we're going to have to do that differently, obviously, because you're working on it still right now. I know with the current change of plans, I'm sure there's a lot up in the air, but if you were putting a percentage on where you are in the development process, What would you say? Like, are you 80% done with the game, 90%? And I know that even is a hard question because I'm sure you're like, even after, you'll be like adding skills and all of those things. But what would you say is the percentage you are towards being done with, at least with a finished product?
I would say right now we're looking at, I'm at about, 95% complete at this point, somewhere right in there, simply because it's supposed to come out in a few weeks. But that does not mean it's the end of the actual game and the content. Just like Diablo 2 changed so much after launch, and many games do. I mean, Diablo 3 has changed a lot after launch. There's, I don't think there really is an end. I have lots of ideas and I would love to keep making this game and keep working on it. Number one feature I would love to add after skill trees is multiplayer. That having multiplayer in the game is something that I've wanted and desperately would like to put in. It's just a huge task and will take me probably at least 6 months, if not a year, in development time. And so, you know, that was just kind of out of scope for what we were trying to do. And so I would love to put that in. And so it's hard to say what percentage of it is done because I could make this game for years and years. There's tons of things that I could add to it to make it an even better game.
As a developer, do you feel like that paradigm of ship a game and continue to work on it that has kind of been allowed by people playing games and accessing them through the internet and, you know, not having to ship a final product? Do you feel like that's liberating or is it scary? I know a lot of developers get a lot of flack for, you know, shipping a game and having day one bug fixes that, you know, come sort of out of the woodworks. But from, like, as a developer's point of view, how do you feel about that whole sort of conflict there?
I like it. I mean, nobody likes, the thing is that making a game is such a weird experience. It's very different than like writing a book or making a movie or other kind of entertainment like that. Yeah. You know, you can iterate on this thing, you can improve it, you can change it. And really the only limits to how you change it are how much you want to work on it and money. Right. So, so because of that, it's just kind of it's kind of a unique experience in that way. And we see this with all kinds of software. You see it, it's not just games, but you see it, you know, how much has Microsoft Word changed over the years and things like that. Like it just keeps iterating, keeps getting better and keeps improving. And as long as people are supporting you in doing that, these things can go a long ways. And so I don't really think of it as, you know, that I like the fact that we're able to do this. I'm like that we're able to kind of extend a product and make it better and just really kind of cater to your audience and maybe even bring new audience in on a patch that's looking forward to a special feature or something like that. So I think that from a developer, it's kind of liberating. It's much more liberating now. Like I'm not as nervous about the launch of this game because it's been in early access. It's been quote unquote launched, in my opinion, for a year, right? So it's it's not really I'm not used to all of the things that have kind of come up and how, you know, I've been working and fixing bugs for a year and putting in new features and things like that. And it will probably be largely the same go this kind of the same route that it's going right now. And then I'll just have like a kind of a beta branch of the game and have the main branch and then kind of in the beta branch, make it kind of like an early access branch or whatever you want to call it, where people who can play the latest and greatest and it'll have some skill trees in and some not and things like that. And they can see the kind of work in progress if they want to.
So in this section, we typically we'll talk about graphics, audio, and how those things hold up over time. But again, we're in a unique case here. So we mentioned this is just you developing the game, but I don't know if anyone's thought about this yet. That means you've also done the art style yourself. And it's pixel art. I'm a huge fan of the retro style. Would you consider yourself a pixel artist now? Like, are you planning on learning more about it?
Well, I learn every day. Yes. And, you know, I think it's like anything else in life. If you want to be good at something, you just do it a lot. And, you know, the more you work on it, the better you'll get. And so I try and work on my skills all the time and I can see my improvement. I'm much better now than I used to be at the beginning. And I think it was definitely the biggest challenge for me was coming up with the art style because it's something that I'd never done before. And so what I wanted my characters to look like, and it was definitely, I knew I wanted to make pixel art. I am also a big pixel art fan. I've made many pixel art games in the past. And so, you know, getting back to those roots and making that kind of game was something that I was interested in. And coming up with style was something I never really had. It took me months and months of tests, and I wasn't as good at the pixel art then as I am now. And I had not done it as long. And so it was not only challenging because it wasn't necessarily what was in my head was coming through in the pixels I was placing on the screen. I was also using like Microsoft Paint and stuff like that to make the pixel art, which turns out that isn't the best program to use. And so, doing this process of like kind of growing as a pixel art and trying to come up with this style at the same time was super challenging. But I'm very happy, very pleased with the way that it turned out and really happy with the way that pixel art has come. Myself as an artist, I've really grown in the years. And I took some courses online and read a bunch of blogs and like got tips from all sorts of people. So it's really there's so many resources out there to be able to do something if there is something that you want to do like that.
Final thoughts.
At the end of each and every one of our episodes, we typically determine whether or not the retro game of the week gets our vote for New Game Plus status. We each give our independent vote, and then it requires 2/3 of the vote to swing one way or another. We're not doing that this week for obvious reasons. This is a different game altogether, a different episode altogether. But I thought maybe in summary to hear a couple of sentences from each of you, Nolan, Kenny, myself. I mean, David, feel free to jump in, but of why you would suggest our listeners pick up a copy of this game and play it, either in this early access or wait what it sounds like a couple of weeks and then get the game at release. You could tell from our enthusiasm in this episode, but we all enjoyed playing It Lurks Below this week. I think Kenny, with his level infinity character, probably spent the most time, enjoyed it all the more. Kenny, would you just kind of, in summary, what would you say to our listeners about It Lurks Below?
Yeah, we always say, you know, whether an old game is worth playing or not, this old style game is 120,000% worth playing. It's got all the things you'll love about a retro game, but polished and modern and accessible. The price is right. It's still under development, continuing to be developed. And it's one of those games that if you like either survival games or platformers or RPGs, you're going to find something that will hook you and then other things that make you fall further in love along the way. Can't recommend it highly enough. It's going to start you busy and keep you busy, and you'll be on your toes. And this one's a no-brainer to me. It's the probably the hardest I've fallen in love with an unexpected, you know, kind of not big 3A titled game in a long time. And, you know, I can't say enough good things. Everybody ought to go out and pick it up. Don't wait for it to actually release. Just go buy it in early access, jump in, and have fun.
Nolan?
Yeah, so it would fall under the category of any of the number of games that I love that I have a problem kind of putting into words or recommending, other than it has charm. And when you play it and when you start playing it, you'll know what I'm talking about. There's something that hooks you. It's only $20. It's you can play it for brief, like a short window. You can play it for hours, as Kenny has discovered. So, and freaking David Brevik. David Brevik, I don't have to say anything else. That's it.
I'll finish by saying Ilurx Below has wonderful music, beautiful art, explosive gore, which you need in David Brevik games. It's got gorgeous graphics. It's got great mechanics and intricate systems. And then it's got cows. And it's got all of this from one man. That's the thing that blows my mind with this game, is that, David, you're sitting there and you're doing this. I'm sure in some ways it's more difficult, but in some ways it's easier if you're like, all right, you six guys work on this. You, this group, you work on this. But you're doing every single bit of it. And that is inspiring. And that alone, with the quality that you're producing, this is a must play, must buy. I know a lot of our listeners this week picked it up and played it along with us, and we had many people fall in deep as well. Whether you play it casually or you want to play more hardcore, this is a game that everyone should at least try. So find a copy of It Lurks Below, go on Steam, play this game. We had a few of our listeners write in, and I've abbreviated their messages a little bit, but Coconut Wizard said, "This game is created and maintained with love, and it shows. It picks fantastic bits and pieces from so many other games and molds it into something all its own. The gameplay is simple to pick up and makes the game hard to put down. I've only had a limited amount of time to play this week, but I can't stop thinking about my next round of immersion to find out exactly what lurks below. Thanks for creating such a simple yet intricate and addictive masterpiece. I look forward to seeing how it continues to grow and get better."
I mean, it's in the title. It, obviously.
It's down there.
It is terrifying.
Yeah, that ain't pretty.
Kathy wrote and said, "This is one of the only games that's got me addicted in a while, aside from Diablo 2, coincidentally. I love the blend of survival and ARPG genre. The description of Terraria plus Diablo fits it perfectly. It has insane replay value with what I assume are randomly generated worlds and the many different classes to choose from. Bard was my favorite so far. I can't wait to see what gets added to the game in the future, and I definitely give this game NGP status if we're still doing that this week."
We'll take it. We'll take the NGP status.
David, so Kathy just compared Diablo plus Terraria. I've heard a few different, even from you, from us in this episode, Minecraft, some different games. You even mentioned one. But if you were saying that this is compared to or a combination of, what two, maybe three games would you combine or connect?
Well, I think that... that's an accurate description. Having it, I didn't play as much Terraria as some other people. I played a little bit of it, it definitely has the same kind of perspective as Terraria. You know, that side view and kind of pixel art look and things like that. So I think that people definitely associated with that. I think my camera is zoomed in a little bit further. Though you can, mm-hmm. in the game, you can zoom the camera in and out, so you could make it a little bit even more Terraria-like if you wanted. But but I think that in general, that's a fairly accurate description of what it's like. It is kind of like you're digging down and stuff. But Terraria is mainly about this kind of expansive landscape, and there's different biomes and all these kind of things, where my game is much more simplistic and straightforward. It's like, it's, this is about killing monsters and leveling up and like dungeon exploring. So it's not, it's not like you're going to the, you know, the water section of the world and the desert section and things like that. No, you're just going down and focused on actually, you know, the RPG and killing monsters and stuff like that. So in that way, it's very much like Diablo. And so that's where you get that kind of mix where it kind of looks a little bit and has some of the features of Terraria, but definitely the play is very much like Diablo.
And then finally, Antonin wrote in. Antonin is a huge Diablo fan. He said, "The game has an addicting cadence. I played as a necromancer and thoroughly enjoyed the item that allows you to fly because I was able to build a central shaft that bore through all layers and just fly up and down it. I had an insane amount of fun with this game this week, and honestly, I haven't sunk this many hours into a game in this short amount of time in a while. I'm constantly comparing it to Terraria in my head. However, I think It Lurks Below has better controls and its quests helped me get into the game much more than I ever did with Terraria. And while the game has a horror-like feel to it, the music always kept it light. And as a side note, I wanted to thank David Brevik for creating games that not only changed my gaming life, but have made some major influences on my IRL life. Diablo 2 still rocks, and I'm probably going to pick it back up when I'm done with It Lurks Below."
Antonin has been sharing a lot of his It Lurks Below gameplay in Discord, so it's been fun to watch his addiction grow. I was like, wait till he gets to this part. He got to that part, and then of course he's freaked out.
All right, one final question for me before we move on and kind of wrap up the episode.
Get it out.
When I'm
system.
Done playing Wizard, what class comes next? What would you recommend?
Well, that's a tough question. I think that Paladin is really good, but Bard so is my jam. That's the number one class that I like to play. I also think that Cleric is ridiculously overpowered. So if you want something ridiculously overpowered, go Cleric. If you want to just run around and automatically kill everything, play a Bard. You barely need to do anything. You just turn on your songs and walk around and watch everything die.
That sounds great.
If the game developer tells you it's OP, it's OP.
Very rarely do we get to do this, David. Actually, I can't even remember a time if we've been able to do this, but it's a really cool opportunity for us to just be able to say thank you. Thank you for creating Diablo. Thank you for creating Diablo 2. Thank you for creating It Lurks Below. To be able to thank you personally is a really cool thing. And I know it's not just from us three, but from our community, from other people that are listening to this. We just wanted to take a moment before we put It Lurks Below, at least temporarily, to the side and choose our next retro game of the week. We wanted to just personally say thank you for creating those things, for sticking to it, and for developing some of the greatest video games known to man.
Easily. No, you're not short-selling it. We appreciate it so much.
Well, thank you so much. It's so nice to hear, and I really appreciate it. It's not just me. There were lots of people involved. Well, not with their lurks below, but the
so we can give you all the credit for this one.
But yeah, exactly. So, but thank you. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. We always then at the end of our episodes randomly select what game we're going to be playing next. But before we do that, from our retro master list, is there a game that you think we should add to our list? A game that is at least 15 years or older that you think deserves to be reviewed or played by us at some time? It can be any genre, any console, just a game that maybe you've got fond memories of that you think we should definitely play at some point.
Well, I don't know exactly what you've played and what you haven't, but
sure.
How about Master of Orion, the original one?
We have
Master
not played that.
Orion?
Master
Orion? What is it?
Orion. Master
okay,
of Orion.
Yeah, Master
the
of
original
Orion.
One.
We'll make sure that it's on the list, and we will add that to the Retro Master list. But for now, we're going to randomly select what game we're going to be playing for the next 7 days.
You've got 17 seconds to tell us what game we're playing next week, or I'm booting It Lurks Below back up.
You've had it open.
I have not. If I knew that there wasn't going to be clicky noises, I probably would have been playing this whole time. But
you know that it tells me when you go play a game at Steam.
Playing a 1997 title for the PlayStation. It is an action adventure shooter game released by Capcom.
Whoa. Okay, important.
And it's called Mega Man Legends.
Wow, really?
Yeah, is this the one that you enjoy playing?
This game has a special place in my heart. A lot of people hate it. A lot of Mega Man fans really hate it, but I stick to it. I love this game. It's not the typical Mega Man game.
Did you mention what console, Dustin? I may have missed it.
PlayStation. I did.
PlayStation.
Okay.
I played it on N64. It's a 3D action Mega Man. It's not really a platformer, and it's awesome.
That's different, but that's what we're going to be playing this week. So alongside of more It Lurks Below, find a copy of Mega Man Legends and play that one as well.
Join us in Discord this week. We have an awesome community where we share stuff like It Lurks Below content, and we'll be talking about Mega Man Legends this week. You can go to ngppodcast.com and click on Join Us in Discord.
Want to say a big thank you to all of our patrons who support us on patreon.com. Your guys' interest in retro video games and your support of the show really helps give us the passion to keep doing what we're doing, and we're just so thankful. Big shout out to two new patrons this week, Mike and Michael, different people, presumably. Thanks for starting to support the show on an ongoing basis. And two new producers this week. That's big news.
That's actually humongous news.
Yeah, that's those who support at the highest level we have on an ongoing basis on Patreon. And so a massive thank you to Richard and Carl for your vote of confidence in New Game Plus and us continuing to bring you retro gaming content that you're interested in. We're so thankful for your support. And big shout out to all our current producers as well, Zach, Dear Baby Grim, and Zion. You guys are absolutely amazing. Thanks.
Yes. And David, finally, where can our listeners find you online? What would you like them to know about It Lurks Below, what you're doing right now, how to get it, any of those things? What are your final words?
You can get It Lurks Below on Steam. It's in early access for a few more weeks. And then you can find me on Twitter at David Brevik. And I think you can go to my website, graybeardgames.com. And that's gray with an A, in case you didn't know how to spell American gray. And so those are probably the most likely places to find me.
Wonderful. And you can find New Game Plus on our social media. That's Facebook, Twitter, and Twitch at NGP Podcast. You can watch us on YouTube at New Game Plus Podcast. And just go to ngppodcast.com. You can find all of our links there. Listen to us directly on any podcast provider of your choice. Make sure you subscribe so that you are the first to get new NGP episodes. And while you're at it, leave a kind rating and review. This episode was edited and produced by our friend Tom Tate. Join us next week as we play Mega Man Legends. Until then, I'm still Dustin.
I'm still in love with It Lurks Below.
I'm Nolan.
And that's David Brevik. And this has been a special, special episode of New Game Plus.